welcome to the very special clubhouse, which is the No Homers Club, or the Patreon only ex-millennial man. There can be one homer, Ty, just no homers. But this is our Patreon account where we're just going to kind of talk the shit about the Civil War movie. And before I start, here is the, I don't know, the general what of the Western forces to my loyalty to Nick Offerman is the greatest other host, Ty. How are you today, Ty?
Hi, everybody. Yeah, I appreciate being put in the Western forces because there's no way. And I adore Nick Offerman, but I was like, man, I do not like you in this movie. So
you didn't like all like 2 minutes he was in?
Yeah, I think his poor, like that whole opening sequence of him trying to get his speech together and everything. And then you and I talked about this yesterday. This is full of spoilers. So if you haven't seen Civil War yet, make sure you don't listen to this, then listen to it after you watch it. But when the journalist goes up to him and says, I need a quote, and his last words are, don't let them kill me. It shows you how weak these so-called patriots are.
Yes, and that's exactly it. So we are talking about Alex Garland's Civil War, which has been out about 2 weeks now. It has done exactly what it's supposed to do. It's gotten people talking. It's gotten people to, in my opinion, completely miss the point of the entire thing. It's gotten people to show the basically. Okay, I'm going to sound like old man yelling at cloud here. But people who need their hands held to be told what the movie means. Like I read one reviewer said, I really love Civil War, except for the fact that so-and-so or Kirsten Dunst didn't look at the camera and say, I completely agree with all your political beliefs, and that's why I'm making this movie. This is an upsetting movie.
Yes.
This is a movie that's not about what causes a civil war. It's about
because they're already in it.
Exactly. It's a movie that is, again, I don't even think marketing wise it was sold. It was sold more to be kind of like an action movie. Mm-hmm. And the action sequences in this movie are not exciting. They are upsetting.
Yeah. I mean, that whole when Kirsten Dunst goes up into her bathtub in that hotel and she's just kind of revisiting past war. She's a photojournalist, a war journalist. And when they showed like when that guy is in the rubber tire being burned alive and they hold on him so long, I was just like, I was shaken to my core watching stuff like that.
It is a hard movie. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I physically was feeling sick at a particular scene that I will tell you about. And I'm going to also say, because I know they're going to listen to this, I have a lot of friends who either will not see this movie. And I mean, people, colleagues of mine who will not see this movie, have seen it and absolutely hate it, or have seen it and do not think it had quite the impact that I think it does.
The thing with me is after you saw it first, our folks saw it, and then I saw it yesterday from when we're recording this, and I'm going to write about it on our website today, but I think it's a good movie. I think it tells its story exactly how Alex Garland and the actors want to tell the story. I also think it's an incredibly important movie. I'm just afraid the people who need to see it, A, won't see it, or B, won't understand what they're trying to say.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that when I talk about the reviews here on it. I equate this. I tell this. I was telling this to a friend of mine who was like, "Yeah, it was pretty good," but he called it like, you know, misery porn or something like that. And I said, sometimes things come to you at certain times of your life, and they leave more of an imprint. Big reason a lot of guys like me are very, very large Star Wars fans is because we were kids when those movies came out. And it put that imprint on us. There's the same thing. I tell people this story all the time. I was 24 when Fight Club came out. I was lost, didn't know where I was going in my life. I had friends who were getting married, one who had, I think, about to get divorced, and they were having kids. They had careers, stuff like that. I didn't know what the hell I was going to do with my life. And I was kind of anxious over that. And I went to go see this movie about just young male alienation, and it spoke to me and it meant something to me personally at the time that I'm like, okay, I think I kind of love this movie. And as time has gone on, every time I see it, I'm back to being that 24-year-old kind of trying to find his way. I mean, this is what good art does to you.
Yeah.
My wife, I've said this before, but she's always like, if I ever get complacent, put on Green Day's American Idiot. American Idiot came out a few months before the 2004 election, and it wasn't this kind of mushy, like what the Democrats are always doing is like, can't we just get along and do this? No, it was pissed off. Mm-hmm. It was angry. It was like, this sucks. And And it meant something to her at that time. It meant something to me, honestly. I was never a Green Day fan. This movie meant something to me at this time in my life. And
me too.
I'm going to tell you guys, this is going to be a really, really bleak podcast, but I am going to leave some hope at the end. People that have listened have known, I work in politics. I've worked in politics a good portion of my adult life, all the way back to my carnival company days. I was first trying to stop the state of Missouri from regulating our industry so much. And I've met a lot of different people in my time in politics. I met a particular guy named Dave Zien. He was a state senator up in Wisconsin. Senator Zien I was in Wisconsin to fight against concealed weapons. They were trying to pass a concealed weapons law, and I was the guy, one of the people who was trying to stop it. And Senator Zien wrote the concealed weapons law. So he and I were on opposite sides of that divide. And this was 2005. And just because I'm a brash, arrogant little prick, I decided to go into his office one day. He had a huge stuffed bear in his office, had guns in his office, in his Senate office in Wisconsin. Big, big guy. He said he talked with me. We joked for a while, all this other stuff. And he's like, you know, there's no way you're going to beat me on this. And I'm like, well, that's why we play the game, Senator Zien. And when I left, he took the tie off around his neck. He gave it to me and he said, this will be a remembrance of our war. I still have that tie, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Today, if I walked into that man's office, he'd shoot me.
100%, without even thinking twice.
Mm-hmm. And that's where we are. That is literally where we are. I don't want to say I'm afraid to do my job, but I've been in the Capitol building in the United States Congress many times, not as a tourist, not as somebody walking around looking at the statues and shit, okay? I've been there to work. And what I saw on January 6th was somebody walking in to your house, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
Walking into a place you are comfortable with being in. And just destroying that. And I was not there on January 6th, but I have a lot of friends and colleagues that were there. Had to be put behind armed guards at their workplace. Okay? Mm-hmm. This is, Ty, I'm not used, I'm no good in the war zone.
Right? No, me neither.
I can't shoot a gun. I don't know how to load it. I don't know all this other stuff. And this is what happened. And then fast forward now a few years later. And there's an entire news network. Well, there's multiples, but the other ones nobody ever freaking watches. But Fox News is literally there creating an entirely alternative idea.
Yeah.
That January 6th didn't happen, that they were tourists, that nothing was bad, that it was the government's fault. And I'm going to tell you where this just really kind of peaked for me was I work out, and they always have CNN on and Fox News. And Ty, it's two different worlds. Completely different worlds. And Fox News is all, if you're old and white, they're coming for you. Mm-hmm. It's all fear-based, just constant fear-based. Even to the point that their grand, glorious leader, Donald Trump, who's on trial, a criminal trial right now.
Yep.
They were on Fox News. They were telling all the details of this one potential juror, this young woman, who had to leave the jury because she was afraid for her life. They're doing this for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So when I saw this movie, and obviously this stuff happened after the movie, but it's just a lead up to it. I didn't see this movie as a warning. I said, this movie's the inevitability.
Ugh.
And that's what kind of got me. And we're not going to go through the whole plot of the movie, but like you said, Kirsten Dunst is a photojournalist, and it's Diego Mora.
I believe that's how you pronounce it. He's the guy who played Wagner Mora.
Oh, yeah.
The guy who played Pablo Escobar on Narcos.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And then Steven Henderson, who's been in
everywhere,
everything.
Yeah, you watch any A24 movie, he's bound to pop up in it.
Yeah, and he played the Mentat for Duke Leto.
In Dune 2.
He wasn't in Dune 2.
Yeah, Dune 1. I said the wrong one.
And then Kaylee Spanny, who is like about to explode as a star. She was in... I know
she was in both Kick-Ass movies, and she was in Good Times at the El Royale, which I've seen.
And then she also just did Sofia Coppola's, she's Priscilla.
She was Priscilla, yeah.
So, I mean, a pretty stacked cast here.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Sonia Mizuno, who's in everything that Alex Garland's done.
I kept looking at her while I was watching the movie yesterday. I'm like, she played the dancing robot with Oscar Isaac in Ex Machina. That's how I knew her.
Yes. She also, have you ever seen Devs?
I've seen bits, like I've watched one full episode. Okay. And then I've seen bits from the other one.
Man, I love Devs. I mean, I could go mm-hmm. on about, I've seen all of Alex Garland's stuff except Men. And I feel like I should go see that. But I know people didn't like it as much as Annihilation or Ex Machina. But I heard somebody say, like, oh, it's a lot like Devs. And I'm like, I love Devs, so I might go see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, she played the lead in that. It's kind of a small cast. It's very good cast. They all do very, very good work in this movie. Mm-hmm. I'll get to Jesse Plemons in a moment. But there's what I like about Joel, the Reuters, the mm-hmm. reporter, who mm-hmm. I like the fact that obviously Kirsten Dunst is, she's supposedly the best photojournalism ever, or not ever, but of the time.
The moment,
They're in New York, which after, again, this movie, come on, they're water rationing and a dude runs by with an American flag, or lady. No. Who's a suicide bomber.
Mm-hmm. And that, again, you need to say that again. These people were, they focus in on a black mom with her baby, and mm-hmm. she keeps saying, I have a baby, I need water. They're rationing water to people. That's how this movie starts.
Yeah. Yeah. And they say early on the president is airstriking his own people. He's in for a third term.
Third term, yeah.
I mean, they anybody who says, like, oh, Garland wussied out and he didn't tell you how the war started. Yes. This is how
get context
starts.
Clues from the movie. Yeah. Just watch the movie.
And I want to say, for people who say, well, I can't believe this movie because there's no way California and Texas would team up, then don't go see the movie.
I also read a thing where Garland said that, because people asked him about that, and he said that he wanted to show it doesn't matter what your politics are. When there's a situation this bad, the right people are going to band together.
Yeah, so right.
They talk about Missouri. They talk about Colorado. Those places you wouldn't think would band up, but I believe they're part of something good as well in this. Or at
no,
least,
they're not. They're part of the. No, they're part of the. They're part of the.
But yeah, people getting so mad about Texas and California. It's like that's not the issue of this movie. Texas and California teaming up to be the good guys is not what he's trying to say.
I'm going to say this too because I've seen a lot of Garland's interviews and stuff like that. I wish he would not talk about it. I know it's his movie. I get mm-hmm. it. But there's comes a time where, as the artist, you need to give it over to the public. And it's like George Lucas going back and changing shit that, well, Han actually didn't shoot Greedo. That's what I mean. I think in some ways, Garland has muddy. My point about it is how they got to this point, I don't think matters in this movie.
No.
But that's what everybody
that's
wants.
That's the story.
Right. But that's what everybody, including Alex Garland's talking about right now. And even to the point he was on Pod Save America, which, oh my God, where he's like, you know, Democrats need to start winning elections. And I'm like, just shut up. Okay. I mean, that's not the point of what's going on here. And it's no offense towards him either, because I think he made a great movie. I think he's made a lot of great movies.
Oh, yeah.
But he's not American.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay, I had no idea.
So I'm not saying stay out of our politics or stuff like that, but the more you try to explain the parts of your film that don't need to be explained, the more fuel you give to people to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say sometimes the art needs to separate from the artist. It's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know if I could ever read or watch another Harry Potter book as long as I live because of the artist being just garbage.
Yeah, an awful person.
But it doesn't take away from what those books meant to people. And I know especially the trans community, when they were young, reading those books meant a lot to them. Mm-hmm. And regardless of what the artist is doing now. But no, I like how the journalists, I even like how Kaylee Spanny's character, they don't understand the weight of what's happening.
No, they just want the picture. They want the story.
Exactly. Because
and the whole push to go to DC is to for Joel to interview the president and for Lee and now Jesse to get their photos of them taking over the office.
Something else with my career, I know a lot of reporters. I know a lot of journalists. I know journalists at all levels, Ty, that have done all sorts of things. And I don't want to name anybody out in particular, but there's somebody I knew in St. Louis who was these people, who was there on the ground in Ferguson, who saw a riot and ran towards it and not away from it like I would. That's what these people do. And this movie is very much in a way, like I said, we know about the American Civil War because of the photos.
Yeah.
And movie's shot very similar to that. Now, I want to fast forward to one particular scene when they're in the apartment complex. And you see the Western Forces guys do not have uniforms on. They have Kevlar. They have automatic weapons and all that stuff. But they're firing against U.S. military forces.
Yep.
And they win.
Uh-huh. Even though they do lose one guy. When I watched that scene with that guy, how scared he was, if I were to make it that far in something like this, I felt like I would have been that guy.
No, and it shows, and that's a raw scene. Like, the sound design of this movie, the way the bullets sound is
so real,
unlike anything else. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not this, like, this very, I'm stealing this for someone else, but they said when John Wick shoots you, the bass hits you.
Oh, yeah. Boom. It's like you're listening to a record.
Right. When these bullets hit, it's just a dead sound. It's just a loud, dead pop.
And there's no, like, body movement. Most action movies where somebody gets shot and you see their arms going back and forth. When this soldier gets shot, he goes right down to the ground, and then they try to help him, and blood is just everywhere, everywhere. Jesse got her shot, though, when the guy was reaching for gauze. She got what she wanted out of that.
And a lot of things that people will say is, well, obviously, Nick Offerman, the president, is a fascist. He's this, he's this. So the Western forces are the good guys. That scene I just talked about, Ty, there are two war crimes in that scene by the Western forces.
They cover up three of the military guys and execute them.
Yes. They
with a machine gun.
Yeah. They also, when they found the injured soldier in the apartment and he was like, help me, they shot
him. Boom. Yeah, they shot him without even a second thought.
I hope I'm saying his name right, but Wagner Moura, who he's joking with them afterwards, and Kirsten Dunst and Kaylee Spani, they're like talking later on about like how to get the good shot and how to do all this other stuff. And it's the movie kind of goes through these little vignettes, and then you get to the scene. Well, before Jesse Plemons, you get to the sniper scene.
I love this scene because this is how, to me, it shows you this is how much it devolves to when Joel is talking to the two guys, and it's like, what side are you on? I'm just trying to survive. That person in that house wants to kill me, and me and I assume it was his boyfriend or partner, we're going to kill him. And I love that the partner, one who's got the scope out and everything, is just like, you need to shut up so I can do what I need to do here.
Yeah, it was. It was. And in a lot of ways, I agree with you. I love that scene for that reason, is that, oh, what side are you on? Who do you answer to? And the guy's like,
that guy's trying to kill me. Yeah. I'm trying to kill
him. Which is, that's what it is. That's what will happen. That's when I talk about that Dave Zien story. It's not he and I having an intellectual discussion. It's that I am trying to destroy his lifestyle and he is trying to destroy mine. And
When they pull up to that spot with that winter wonderland, it was so eerie. And they're playing, I think it was Jingle Bells that the thing is playing. It's just like, I know you said this to our folks after you saw it. I saw it just yesterday. I cannot shake some images I saw. And that's, you see that dead soldier with the winter wonderland and bubbles flying.
Yeah.
And that's all I could think about seeing that. Just how eerie and creepy it was.
By no means do I think this is a perfect movie, because I
do want to say, before even that winter wonderland sequence, there's a sequence where they pull up into the gas station to get money.
Oh, yeah.
$300 American will only buy you a sandwich, but she says 300 Canadian. That's when stuff gets talking. But then Jesse goes to look, and these three hillbillies in Virginia or wherever, the West Virginia, I don't know where they are at this point, have two guys strung up, and this other hillbilly with his backwards hat on, his New York Jets jersey. I used to go to high school with that guy. He never talked to me. This is what will happen.
Yes.
People who don't have power or control are going to suddenly have it, and they're going to do stuff like that. I have a friend, I'm not going to name their name, but we had a bad falling out because of our political differences, and I felt like that could be him and me, and he could just torture me as much as he wanted because we disagree on politics. If something like this were to happen.
When you're finally given the excuse to destroy the other person, and again, that's what I think happened at January 6th. Now you have the excuse. There's no more decorum. What January 6th, the reason why it didn't work is because they're all dumbasses. That's why. It was not planned out properly. That's why it didn't work.
Dipshit senators like Josh Hawley are out there pumping their fists at all those insurrectionists. They're terrorists, and these people.
And look, again, having worked at the Capitol a lot, that building is a fortress. And the thing that scared me the most after January 6th was the ease that they got in on. So if they were planned, if they did have weaponry, if they did have this stuff, I don't know what would have happened.
Would have been bad.
Now, I will say the one part of the movie that kind of took me out was when their two buddies came by and they were jumping between cars and stuff. And I told this to a friend of mine where they're like, don't you think Alex Garland is a little like not subtle? I'm like, he's never been not subtle. No.
I also think in a movie where it's, and it gets as bleak as it will in the whole movie after this whole scene that you're talking about. But I think in this world that Alex Garland wrote and created, and again, the scene, they could have cut it out. It was 5 minutes. People are flipping through cars. They're talking to each other. You think it's a chase scene of somebody coming after them. But I just think he put it in there to be like, hey, you will have some laughs during all this. It won't just all. But again, I agree. It didn't need to be. It was an unnecessary thing. But I think he put it in there to be like, see, it's not all
no,
dour. Right.
And then this leads to the scene with Jesse Plemons, which.
What was the white stuff he was pouring on people in that mask?
Some kind of like disinfectant. I think it was supposed to. You see a lot of the films of the Holocaust. The Nazis were putting that on like dead Jewish bodies. I think it cuts the smell or does something. Like, yeah, but it's like a
disinfectant. I do want to say, too, before you get into the Plemons part, there is. Sorry, I keep cutting you off. But there's a scene where they are in West Virginia and they need a place to stay. And it's just like a tent camp that they go to that looks like it's in an abandoned football field. And I got incredibly sad when I saw little kids running around there. And like, that was how they play. Mm-hmm. That's what they do now is they go to these, essentially they're internment camps and they go to them. And the way kids play is running through a abandoned stadium that's been graffitied. And because they're little kids born into this shithole of a world that they've been born into, that made me really, like I thought, because I have a 12 and an 8-year-old and I was thinking that would be absolutely awful for them to have to deal with that.
Like the show The Last of Us, and it's I think it's the second to last episode where they show Bella was born into this.
Yeah,
she was born into the apocalypse.
I got a lot of vibes of Last of Us while watching this movie too.
Yeah, so you get to this Plemons scene, and first off, Jesse Plemons was not the original actor that was supposed to.
Read about that. Yeah,
there's a different actor. I don't know if they ever named, but they couldn't do it, and so Kirsten Dunst is like, "Hey, my husband will do it." And then she said he read it, said, yeah, OK, but he wanted something. So he and Kirsten drove around Atlanta because it's being filmed there like all afternoon till he found those glasses.
Oh, my God. The red glasses that he was wearing. That's what he wanted to play this.
Because he wanted
virulent,
it to be
racist.
He wanted it, though, to immediately be off-putting. And nobody does immediate off-putting better than Jesse Plemons. He's just
telling our folks, you know, from Breaking Bad to the roles he's done, he's almost eerily good at playing a virulent racist.
Well, if you think about where he and Kirsten Dunst met was on
Fargo, right?
And he was not the bad guy in Fargo.
No, he was the butcher, but an actual butcher, not a murderer until he had to. Type thing in that show.
And then he was the book Killers of the Flower Moon is actually about the FBI solving these murders.
Okay.
I understand why Scorsese didn't go that route. He wanted to focus more on the Native Americans. But Jesse Plemons does show up in that movie as that FBI guy.
Okay. All right. So
not always creepy, but
No.
Everybody knew this scene was coming because in the trailer there is the line where Wagner Mora says, we're American. And he says, oh, yeah, what kind of American?
Yeah.
So we all knew that was coming. And Taya was not prepared for how extra awful that line was going to be.
Yeah, I mean, the way he comes across and, you know, the three of them pull up. There's Jesse and there's the other guy who was driving the car with their friend. And they're talking and they keep saying, these are my colleagues. They're my colleagues. And he pointed to the Asian gentleman who was down. He's like, oh, that's your colleague, and shoots him without a second thought. Doesn't say why, doesn't say anything, just because he happened to be an Asian American is what I figured he did. And even when Jesse and the guy are there and, you know, they have them, and I mentioned the white stuff that Plemons' character has put on people, as he's doing that, you see a trailer kind of lift up and bodies just falling into this mass grave. I mean, a mass grave of people. And when Jesse eventually is in there and she needs to be pulled out, you look at it and it's mainly minorities and or women that are in there. But what I wasn't prepared for it either. And what I kept noticing was the bruising and blood on his hands, Jesse Plemons' hands, which means he clearly beats these people. That's how he gets off or whatever on this. But as I walked out of the theater and I thought back on what I saw with that scene, I thought his character is the type of person that scares me the most if/when something like this is going to happen, because that's somebody who, as you said, just needs a reason to get rid of people who don't look like him. And it is one of the most disturbing, most unnerving, and I think essential to show you how bad some of these people can be. It is integral to the plot of this movie, no matter how upsetting. And I mean, Jesse, when she flees the scene at the end and gets in the car and they just show her vomit, that's exactly how I felt watching that scene.
Yeah. And this is at the time where when they get away, Stephen Henderson is shot. And then they have that Sturgill Simpson song.
Stephen Henderson heroically hits them into the mass grave. He saves Jesse and I can't think of Kirsten Dunn. Lee. Joel, Jesse, and Lee.
Her name's Lee Smith because I'm like the Cardinals closer.
I just kept hearing Lee and that's my wife's name. Yeah. So.
Right. But they get to Charlottesville where the Western Front has all of their things and it's a full-blown military operation. Early, those guys didn't have uniforms. Now these Western Front people, they have uniforms. And
we do need to say with the Plemons thing, when he's talking to Joel, he asked Joel where he's from, Florida. Yeah. He asked Jesse, Missouri, Colorado, Lee's character. And then when he asked Tony, the guy, he won't answer him. And the way that Plemons is so eerily calm with this guy, and then the guy eventually says Hong Kong, it's just like...
Yeah, he says China and blows him away.
Yeah, it's like, just say... I do want to say that mention that Jesse and Lee both comment on their parents living in Missouri and Colorado and what they say their parents are doing. I think that's what I would be doing, living on a farm, pretending none of this is going on. And that is the exact opposite way. Or even when they go to that town where it's like, oh, we see the news, we don't do anything. They still have snipers on.
Yeah. And I think that's actually a really great part of the movie, because do you know who notices the snipers is the black guy.
Oh, yeah. And that's right.
And when he's talking to Lee and she's like, I have forgotten how this used to be. And he said, and I remember what it used to be like.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very telling little piece of this movie.
But just the girl in the shop being like, oh, we don't pay any attention to that. But then, Stephen McKinley Anderson's talking to her and there's snipers on the building.
Well, when they get to the Western Front, they have Chinooks and they have Blackhawks and tanks. And
it seems so loud, too, like with the helicopter flying over.
Yeah, they have F-35s. I mean, the one thing I remember my wife said is the U.S., you can't defeat the U.S. military. And I go, you can fan wank all you want on this, but I just if I want to say what I look, huge, huge spoiler here, everybody, the Western forces win.
They do.
OK. And they make notice of they say like the generals, they surrendered to us. They're going into D.C. They're going to get the president. And they're all like, and whoever gets him first, it's going to shoot him again. That's a war crime. OK, but they
shoot the press secretary who's just talking to them.
Well, yeah. So they get into they talk with the embedded journalists and everybody's like, well, we're going to go to D.C. and get this. I mean, Kirsten Dunst is still stone faced, but Kaylee Spaney and Wagner Moura are destroyed.
Wagner Moura puts on, because he just saw his two friends and one of his colleagues die. And I'm glad they made it silent, like just with the song playing over it, because you could see Wagner Moura, Joel, just beside himself, screaming at what he's just witnessed and losing three people who were incredibly important to him.
And now we're at Washington, D.C. at night, and I know exactly where they are. You see the Western forces are attacking holdup group at the Lincoln Memorial. And where the Western forces are, Ty, from that angle, that means they're in front of the Vietnam Wall.
Oh, wow.
You see, there is a scene where you see a rocket launcher blow part of the Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah, they shoot it out and like the columns start to come down.
You see the Black Hawk helicopter down. And I know this avenue, okay? I know where this road is. Just unloading on... like a CVS or something, or a Walgreens, just unloading
red and orange bullets everywhere. It looks like fireworks.
And this siege of DC is just constant gunfire,
and it's relentless, just absolutely relentless. A loud beating. I was sitting forward in my chair at the theater, just like anxious.
By this time, Kirsten Dunst is having severe PTSD.
Yeah, she's freaking out.
Kaylee Spaney keeps running out in front, and Wagner Moura keeps pulling her back.
Even the soldiers, so much so the soldiers have to start pulling her back.
They get over to the White House. A huge firefight ensues. The president's limo comes out. Again, war crime. They just completely slaughter everybody.
two people get out of the, one of them's a lady who has her hands up and they just shoot.
Yeah. And then they're still all going after this when Kirsten Dunst gets her composure back and she says, he's not in the car.
Uh-huh.
And they grab a group. They go through the White House. Again, all the White House, firefight, firefight.
When they're walking around in the White House, the Western Front soldiers say, you cannot be doing what you're doing right now. Yeah. Like, get out of our way and let us do our job.
Yeah. And then Kaylee Spani jumps in front, records Lee's death.
Yeah, because earlier in the movie, they had asked Lee, would you shoot Jesse? And if she was dying, and she was like, what do you think? And then because Jesse has to get the shot, she shoots her, one of her two idols that she's mentioned in this movie. She's taking, shooting, I should say, taking her picture as Lee is being shot and killed by somebody trying to protect the president in this movie.
They get in, they find Nick Offerman, they drag him out. Joel says, wait, I need a quote. And that's when he says, please don't let him kill me. So that's good enough. They full out blast him.
Murder him.
And they all sit there smiling. Jesse.
Well, the end credits is, she
takes that shot. And Ty, I don't think that's supposed to be a celebratory shot.
You and I talked about this too after I saw it and we were texting. And I'm a liberal. I'm as liberal as they get. You know this about me. I vote Democrat. I'm very pro-choice, gay marriage is fine, all that stuff. Like, I'm the most liberal dude. I came out of this movie thinking that the Western forces or Western Front, I don't remember what it's called, is just as bad as the insurrectionists and the, like, the, what do they call the people who,
the insurgents?
The way that, I will say, when Nick Offerman was shot, being a liberal, I'm like, good, they got the bad guy. That doesn't mean the world's going to get any better. That doesn't mean things are going to change. It's all with Joel, Lee, and Jesse. When Jesse got into it, it was all about getting what they needed, what they wanted. They were trying to maximize something for themselves out of this. With the guys who were telling them it's $300 American to get a hand. That the thing with this movie is that evil is going to breed more evil, no matter which side you're on. You can think you're fighting for the good guys, like these Western Front soldiers who went in and killed this dictatorial president, but it's not. These are war crimes, as you mentioned. This is not a good thing. This isn't going to change what they think is going to change in the world. Or if it does, it's going to take so much more time. So you had told me, before I even saw it, you said there's no good people in this movie. I would push back a little bit on that. I think Stephen McKinley Henderson was a good person who had good ideas in mind, but he was an old guy. I could have told you as soon as he showed up on screen, he's not making it. Mm-hmm. He's not going to get out of this. But everybody else was kind of in it for their own type thing. And yeah, when I walked out, like I kept my composure together pretty much throughout the whole movie. And then when I walked out and was walking to my car and I thought about what I saw, that's all I could think is that this is not, nobody's good. Nobody's a hero with this. I thought about how I would react, my wife, my kids, my brothers, our parents. This is probably my biggest nightmare in the world, that something like this is going to happen. And I never thought I'd live through a pandemic. And then now I'm going to see this movie and it's like, could this happen? And I knew I was going to have issues watching this movie and I was going to have anxiety and OCD stuff with it, but I wouldn't make it in a world like this. I would be dead within the first month of a civil war breaking out. I couldn't handle there's just nothing for the Western Front people. There's Western Forces people. There's nothing. There's no phones. There's no TVs. Everybody's reading books. They're playing card games. I couldn't live in an internment camp. This movie devastated me, and I think everybody needs to go watch it. And it's one of the most important movies to come out in the last decade.
No, I agree, because here's the thing. I'm going to speak for Alex Garland. And he hasn't said this, but this is what I felt like after I saw this movie. And I talk about this inevitability. When this happens, it's the end of America. This isn't like the Civil War where Abraham Lincoln said, you know, with malice towards none, charity towards all, or whatever. That's not going to happen. And I think it's a very deliberate point that the Western forces win, quote unquote, win.
Yeah.
And you got to know, they only throw a little bit here and there, but it's California and Texas in this kind of loose confederation. And then there's Florida, who's not part of their group.
Yeah.
And then there's these people out in the Northwest that are not part of their group either. So
yeah, Portland's got like their whole own thing, I thought they said.
Right, yeah. But I think that's where this movie starts, in the midst of this war, not how it happened, not how it started. It's all. It's going on. There's no debate. There's no Fox News, no CNN, nobody talking, nobody being like, oh, this is when Trump became presidential or whatever. No, this is on. And then the movie ends when that part of the war is over.
Mm-hmm.
There's no rebuilding. This is it. When this happened, we are coming to a point now. The acceleration is the end of the American empire. I tell this to people all the time, and it's they look at me like I have five heads. But the United States is the third largest country by population on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Third. And I tell them all the time, it's too big. We don't operate together. This is not a country that shares values. And I know people are going to disagree and stuff like that, but it's no. Having especially the last, I don't think people understand, and I'm not blaming, well, I am blaming Trump to a point, but I'm blaming more people like CNN or MSNBC who just dismissed him, who just did not tell the story, who spends their time today. I mean, Ty, we just finally got aid for Ukraine. And CNN, I shit you not, on their online thing, called Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House. This was his Churchill moment. Fuck you. That man is a terrible human being. And while you sit in your New York offices, CNN, you don't realize that me down here in Southwest Ohio don't feel comfortable going 15 miles out of where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I saw this movie. I'm like, this is it. This is the inevitability. This is where we're going. But before I get to Hope, Ty, I do want to talk about the critical response to this movie.
Like that good Rotten Tomatoes score I saw.
It did. And when you go through and you look at what people liked about it, it's a lot what you and I said. It's you know, it's brutal. It's realistic. It's got these scenes that you'll never, ever forget. It's the acting is out of this world.
Kirsten Dunst was amazing.
Yes. But you get these so-called, and I know you call yourself a liberal, people who know me. I always say liberals are the people like Rachel Maddow who get on MSNBC and with their intellectual, or Jon Stewart, you know, who with their intellectualism and they're like, we're smarter than everybody else. Bill Maher. Well, Bill Maher is a piece of
that guy's a jackass,
more of
yeah.
a piece of shit, but used to be the liberal. These people that like to talk things out. I'm like, I'm a leftist. You need action. And you talk mm-hmm. about what would happen. How, like, you go, I'd probably be dead in this world. I guarantee you I'd be dead in 5 minutes because I would run towards the fight. When 2020 pandemic, height of the, I mean, we were hit with a pandemic and then the George Floyd summer mm-hmm. and there were protests galore in the city of Cincinnati. I took my 10-year-old son in the car to go drive down to show him the protests.
Yep.
I wouldn't do that today.
My kids saw the same.
Yeah. I wouldn't do that today. But a lot of what I was saying critically, a lot of the liberals, Stephanie Zacharak, Slate, Sam Adams, Slate, they all didn't like this movie. And I'm going to tell you why.
Why?
So Slate said, purposeful though it may be, Garland's squishiness can read only as a failure of nerve. A more successful political movie wouldn't be so wary of aiming at real targets. He's mad because they didn't say Trump bad, me good.
Okay.
That's what he didn't like. Or you have.
Again, I don't think that's the point.
The New Yorker. Again, these are your typical limousine liberal type publications. Huffington Post. They all didn't like this.
Why?
Because it didn't clearly align with their politics.
But that's not the point of the movie is to show you how bad it can get.
Right. And that's what a lot of the other critics are. This movie is visceral. This movie, I mean, the New York Times, it's Morning Again in America. It's mesmerizing, horrible, and gripping. They like it. I mean, these are a lot of those critics do like it. Whoever reviewed it for RogerEbert.com gave it 4 stars. But all these liberals, these Slate and Huffington Post and all that are like, oh, the movie's politics are too squishy. Well, they're in the same bed tie with the far right.
Mm-hmm.
The Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro's place. Oh, they didn't like it because it's they all called it an anti-Trump movie. Hollywood's latest anti-Trump
movie.
They
never said the name in the movie.
Breitbart.com. So if you especially want to go swim in dog shit for
Your algorithm is going to be all jacked up from looking at this stuff, man. So
there, this is the title of the review. Civil War review. Ridiculous, dopey, anti-Trump snuff film.
What? What is happening? These are the same people who read that, who called me a snowflake, are getting upset when they don't even mention their deity's name in this movie at all.
in his review, I'm obviously not going to read the whole thing, but in his review, he talks about how a scene between Kaylee Spani and Kirsten Dunst, where they're talking about Kirsten Dunst's career.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, well, I know you became famous when you took the photo of the Antifa massacre.
Antifa, yeah.
So this reviewer for Breitbart brings that scene up. He's like, now that's a movie I'd want to go watch.
The Antifa massacre?
Yeah.
Did he just watch it in Civil War?
No, he but that, she, that's I, what I mean. This is, these right-wingers are so insulated into their own world that I think to myself, look, I'll say it here. I'll say it right now. What's today? We're recording this on April 22nd. I'll 2024. So
yeah,
I will say this right now. I do not think Trump is going to win the election.
I hope you're right.
And
I'm terrified of it.
Right. But I don't think he's going to win the election. And what happens after that is what makes me lose sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because this dangerous line of thinking, I go back to 2004, the John Kerry, George W. Bush election. And I remember the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. They printed out a map. I have this map just ingrained in my head where they had every county in Missouri. And they had red, the counties that voted red were for Bush and the counties that voted blue were for Karen.
Mm-hmm.
There were three counties that voted.
Can I guess?
Or I'm sorry. Three areas. But yeah.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
St. Louis, Columbia, and Kansas City?
Exactly.
Yep. That's what I thought.
And John Kerry lost Missouri by less than like 10,000 votes.
That's what bums me out about living in where I live in Missouri is
it's the same thing here. But here's the problem.
I'm very Democratic, so right. It just drives me nuts.
Here's the problem, Todd. Let's just, for lack of a better word, say that Missouri, Columbia, and Kansas City make up 50% of the state.
St. Louis, Columbia, and Kansas City.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. But let's just say that for argument's sake. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the state, which is the other 50%, geographically is larger.
Oh, yeah.
So I've seen that map on the national level. And you look at that map on the national level, it's bright red with these little blue spots all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And those blue spots represent over 50% of the population. But what has happened since that I saw that map 20 years ago in the Post-Dispatch is Fox News and the right wing has been, the country's more Republican. Because look how much redder it is than blue. And it's like, no, asshole.
Got it, yeah.
It's not.
What they all said during the pandemic and the vaccination where they're going to do their own research.
Yeah.
They need to do better research with the mapping that they're looking
at. But again, the CNNs and the MSNBC don't call them out on it. So I'm like, since they've been in this reality, I have said this before, but I'm going to say it again. I'm a flamethrower. I'll go out there and I'll go incite people and poke them in the face and things like that. And you know what? After six straight months of being called a pedophile every single damn day on Twitter, I said, that's it. I'm not doing this anymore.
Okay? Twitter's a bad place to be anyway.
Because that's all they have is you criticize them for something. I have a good friend of mine who's Republican. Every time I say something about how bad Trump is, well, Joe Biden's just as bad. No, he's not. Yep. And I even tell her, do I think Biden's not great? Yes, I do not think Biden's great. Or she's like, if you're going to put Trump in jail, you should put Clinton in jail. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
they always, again, the friend I mentioned earlier in this podcast, his response to anything I would say was either, you know, I'd say, oh, Trump did this or that. Well, Biden did this. But then it would also just be, you're a snowflake. You're I don't want to say the other words that he said, but it's just name calling. It's childish. Name calling, but I think what Civil War showed me is that you put a gun in this person's hand, then they become the most dangerous person on the planet.
And that's why, as you said, this movie's important for people to see now. I know I have another friend who doesn't want to see it because he's like, it's irresponsible to put a movie like this out at a time in our country like this. And I'm like, this is the time for the movie.
Yeah, when is the right time supposed to be? When are we supposed to do it?
No, but I get it. We don't want to think we're teetering over the edge. And I'll pull this together, Ty, and maybe before I say my positive things. Right now, the Fallout show, show based off
video game. Watched the first episode last night.
Yeah, it's on Amazon, and I've gone through it, but there's a point in there. You probably missed it in the first episode. You pick it up later on, but one of the guys calls Walton Goggins' character a commie.
Oh, I haven't heard that yet. Okay.
Yeah, it's like right after.
Oh, no, the dad at the birthday party calling him a commie. Yeah, yeah.
So it becomes kind of a storyline later on in the show. And I don't, even though we spoiled the hell out of Civil War, I'm not going to spoil the hell out of Fall.
Well, you can, I've only seen one episode, so you can't spoil that for me.
But there's a scene where these two characters are talking. And one of them looks at the other because they're at a communist party meeting. And one of them looks at the other one and says, I'm not a communist. It's just a name they call me because they think it's bad.
Okay.
And I thought after I saw that line, I thought about our society. I thought about Civil War. I thought about this, that it's like we can't even define ourselves anymore.
Nope.
Is somebody out there sitting in a house with a winter wonderland and a sniper rifle? If they're given the chance to shoot you,
yeah,
they'll shoot you.
They can do it without a second thought.
You give a lowly army grunt power, and they decide they want to ethnically cleanse their Virginia town, they'll do it.
Yep.
And that's just where we are. But so everybody's not slitting their wrist when we're done with this tie. Where do
I'm bummed out, dude.
Where do I have hope?
Yeah, where do you have hope?
I do some work with schools. And political work. And it has been pretty dire around here. I know around where you are, too, with a lot of these right-wing nut jobs getting school board positions.
Rockwood, the school district my kids are in, actually got good people elected this time who I voted for, which was such a breath of fresh air. I couldn't have been more happy when I saw those returns come back.
Well, there's been two cycles since these Moms for Liberty dumbasses have taken over.
Yeah.
And in those two cycles, they're losing.
Mm-hmm. The people I voted for here destroyed the crazier ones, if you will.
Yeah. Here in Ohio, there's a school board. There's a woman, one of these far right nut jobs was elected, and she's done nothing but havoc. The superintendent has left because she got access to some of his therapy records when him and his wife were going through a divorce, and
Jeez. She
posted them. And then one of the other school board members got a restraining order against her.
Wow.
So now she couldn't even come to school board meetings because she would violate the restraining order. Well, they just waited for her to miss enough meetings that they could kick her off, and they kicked her off.
Okay.
So you do see that political trend shifting. But then the other thing, I'm going to be honest, that gives me hope is our kids.
Yeah.
I see what my son's learning in school. I see what he's interested in learning in school. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's better.
Totally.
they're able to see my kid's school. He's in eighth grade and they're reading the graphic novel Mouse.
Nice. That's great. Yeah.
Which is brutal.
Oh, yeah.
But you have these teachers, you have this stuff they just got done with Anne Frank's diary, too. And they talk about it and he asks questions and people go through and they realize that. Well, like, what did he say to me the other day was, I don't know why everybody thinks George Washington's such a great man. He wasn't a great man. He goes, he was an important man. He did very important things. He did a lot of good stuff, but he wasn't a good man on his own.
No.
And I'm like, exactly.
Yeah, that's good. That's very good. That's refreshing to hear. Well, and like you guys even, I have an 8-year-old daughter and, you know, I tell her every day that she's important. She can run the world, do everything. But I like that she's a heavy reader. So like you and your wife gave her a book about Amelia Earhart for Chris and like for the holidays. And my parents do the same thing. And she asks questions. And that's the same thing with my son. Because I study Black history so much, he wants me to tell him about Malcolm X and people like that. And I tell him the full truth about everything. I don't just give him the school version. But yeah, I think it's good that he has these questions for me because that means he's doing some of his, you know, as the right wing would say, he's doing his own research on stuff. And we could even talk about our nieces, who's one's in college and one is going to college, and they have ideas galore. Yeah. Nothing makes me happier than just sitting down and talking to the two of them about what they see in their future.
Yeah, and what that future looks like, we'll see.
I hope it's, again, they said it and I totally related with it, but Jesse's character said, my parents live in Missouri on a farm and they're acting like none of this is going on.
Yeah, well, if I was going to give it my Homer Simpson 47 thumbs up or my On Cinema, At the Cinema, 5 bags of popcorn and 2 little Civil War musket balls. Or
Well, it's just like, again, I think it's a well-made movie. It is brutal. It's unrelenting. It's unnerving. It's disturbing. And it is one of the most important pieces of content to come out in years. This, to me, for what we're seeing it, reminds me so much of Bo Burnham's Inside from 2021. How it just takes this moment in time and encapsulates it better than anything else has to this moment, to this point.
Well, Ty, I told you we're going to talk 20 minutes or so, and we've talked almost an hour. So
I can talk another hour about it.
Yeah. So people, go see it. And
yeah,
please tell us why you didn't like it or what you did like about it. It's a movie that's going to stick with me for a long time, and I think it's a movie we're going to be talking about for the rest of this year.
And it's only an hour and 45 minutes long.
Yeah.
So a movie to have that much stuff in it, to be shorter than most movies that come out now, I think says a whole lot about
it. So Alex Garland has tackled AI, has tackled isolation and alien intervention, has tackled men, I think, is like about misogyny or something like
that.
I
believe so.
And then the Civil War, and all of his movies are less than 2 hours long.
Uh-huh. So. And I haven't seen Men, and I've only seen one episode and a half or whatever of Devs, but Ex Machina, Annihilation, and now Civil War are three of the better, and I will say most important movies out there. Annihilation is criminally underrated.
Yeah. And he did write, he wrote Sunshine and 28 Days Later.
Sunshine is one of my all-time favorite movies, so 28 Days Later terrifies me to know that. But
I want him to go back to writing, directing, and
I believe that's what he's doing, yeah, is just writing.
And stop talking about this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. No need to bring it up anymore. Your movie's out, it's been out. People who have seen it are gonna see it. And let a couple of suburban white dads sit here and talk about how important it is to us.
Yeah. All right, Ty. Well, this is it, people. Thank you for your ears. Anything else that you may use to listen, this is our Patreon. I'll probably put this out on a regular feed to entice more of you to come over here, but this is the hot garbage that you're going to get. And
just go see the movie. Other like you said.
If people want to hear what we're going to talk about, the NBA playoffs and stuff, they're going to have to come here. And
yeah,
if they want to hear what we have to say about Fury Row or Furiosa.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
I know. I've already like taken out $1,000 from my bank account. I'm just going to throw it at the movie screen when I get there.
And when they're like, what ticket do you want? I'll be like, don't you know? So I'll get out of about it.
Oh, and the last thing I'll say about Civil War, I said it's been out 2 weeks. It's been number one movie 2 weeks.
Yeah. A24's highest budgeted movie ever, and they're making all their money back. I love A24 is the best studio out there. It's the FX of movie studios. They were able to stay working during the strike because they paid their actors and writers a living wage.
Yeah. All right, Ty. Well, take care easy.
Yeah, you too, man.
As in the words of Axl Rose, what's so civil about war anyways? Such a terrible lyric.
Yeah. I'm glad that you guys told me to watch this movie, and it's... I'll write about it today, but it's unrelenting, man. Brutal.
All right. All right. Take it easy.
All right, dude.
Kshana kshana sa poojile athanga swapna lo.
The Ex-Millennial Man podcast is a production of SeedSane.com, fully owned by R.D. Kulik & Associates, LLC. Producers Ty Kulik and Ryan Kulik, adequately engineered by Ryan Kulik.